Hey y'all, it's Cold Cases, Cults, Murders, oh my. And I'm your host, Pamela, with my dog, Sam, and we're on the case today. Today, we will be looking at two unsolved cases. One is a plane hijacking. Hello, reason to never get on a plane. Thank you. And the other is a bombing that happened on Wall Street in 1920. So come along with us to a world of pure depravity as we look at these two unsolved cases. So this week's episode is going to be shorter than some of my others, but I hope that you still enjoy it. So the first case that we're going to be looking at, and many of you probably know this case, is the strange disappearance of D.B. Cooper. On Wednesday, November 24th, 1971, a man who identified himself as Daniel Cooper, sorry about that, a man who identified himself as Daniel Cooper, he bought a $20 ticket from Portland to Seattle. Cooper was believed to be in his 40s. He was seen wearing a business suit and an overcoat, brown shoes, a white shirt, and a black tie from JCPenney's. Because apparently those ties at that time were just flying off the shelves. But I don't know, because I wasn't alive in 1971. Let's be real. Anyways, he also had with him a briefcase and a paper bag. Now, some sources say it was a white paper bag, but others say it was a brown paper bag. So for the safety of all, we're just going to call it a paper bag. Once on the plane, he ordered a bourbon and soda. Once the plane was in the air, he handed the flight attendant a note. As she was putting it in her pocket, he told her, No, really, he told her that she should look at the note. He asked her to sit down next to him and told her that he had a bomb. Cooper opened his briefcase and showed it to her. And, well, to her, it looked like a bomb. There were some red sticks in there and, you know, some wires. I mean, not sure they made really big red crayons back then, but if they did, it could have been that and some string or something, but we're going to go with what the flight attendant went with, and it was a bomb. So, what happened next? Well, I lost my place. Then Cooper wrote, told her to write this down, take a little note, something, something, something. Anyways, that's not really what he said, though. He really said, write down everything I'm about to tell you and take it to your captain. Because I just want to say, he's a super bossy, you know, hijacker. Maybe all hijackers are bossy. I don't know. I've never been in a hijacking. I don't want to be in hijacking either. So hijackers, stay away. Anyways, what happened next, you might be asking? Well, here's what he told her. He told her to write down, I want $200,000 by 5 a.m. Same, bro. I want that as well. In cash only and only in $20 bills. Because he really wanted it to look like it was way more money than what he really had. But I don't really know that. I'm just saying. Also, he wanted two back parachutes and two front parachutes. Not really sure what a front parachute is for, but he just wanted to be safe on all sides. When the plane lands, I want a fuel truck ready to refuel the plane. And then he said, no funny stuff or I'll do the job. The FBI got the money from banks all over Seattle, and the Seattle PD got the parachutes needed. Once all of Cooper's demands were met, he let the passengers and some of the crew on the plane get off. I mean, he was like, dude, I don't need all y'all here witnessing my crime. So then after the plane took off, he and the crew, well, they did get refueled, and then they took off. And he and the crew that was left, well, he told them, chart a course to Mexico City, but do not fly over 10,000 feet. During the flight, Cooper put on some dark wraparound glasses. Then, at a little after 8 p.m., somewhere between Seattle and Reno, Cooper would open the rear door of the plane and jump out with two parachutes and the money. He was never seen again. Like, poof, goodbye. Years later, a young boy would find a bag and several rotting $20 bills in it. They are sure. Oh, no, they are not. They are not sure. Ah, sorry. Losing my place here. They are not sure that Cooper could have survived the jump, as he was not dressed, you know, for jumping out of a plane. Also, there was no way to control where the parachutes would land. I mean, they didn't have those little pulley things, I guess. I don't know. I don't really know much about parachute making now or in the 70s. So in recent years, like within the last year or two, a researcher found like a white sheet near where the money was found. And he also believes that he may have found parts of the tie that the man was wearing based on microscopic material found on the tie. This researcher thinks he may have figured out who D.B. Cooper was. And I'll do another episode if, like, the guy turns out that it really is who he thinks it is and, like, all his information is legit. However, currently, despite massive manhunts, I'm having trouble with words today, that have taken place over the year, no one has ever found D.B. Cooper. It is one of the greatest cold cases in FBI and U.S. history, according to one of the articles that I read. Next, we will be looking at the case of the Wall Street bombing from 1920. One day, in September of 1920, during a lunch rush, a nondescript man parked his horse and cart across from the J.P. Morgan building. Once at that location, he stopped the cart, he climbed down, and he walked off into the crowd. Just minutes later, the cart exploded. My question here is, was the horse still tied to the cart, or did he take the horse with him? I feel like if he had taken the horse with him, then people probably would have remembered him better. So maybe he didn't take the horse with him. I don't know. We're gonna choose to believe that the horse is alive. Well, I mean, it was the 20s, so technically he's not alive now. But we're going to assume that he was not in the explosion. Anyways, back to the point. When the cart exploded, it shot out metal fragments into the crowd. Wow, my tongue is very twisty today. It killed more than 30 people on site and injured 300 people. As the days went on, it would claim the lives of more as they would succumb to their injuries. It did not specify how many people lost their lives, but, I mean, it was the 20s and medication was, well, scarce. Or maybe the know-how to doctor, like, infections was not what it is today. So, of course, you know, it's Wall Street, so, you know, they were like, okay, well, there was a bombing here yesterday, but you know what? The very next day, they were like, hey, everybody, back to business as normal. What bombing? They cleaned that up yesterday. Get back to work. I mean, I don't really know what the conversation was, but I can just imagine that, like, you know, Joe and Freddie, like, they're talking about what happened yesterday, and Joe's like, can you believe that Mr. Morgan is making us come to work today? And then Freddie's like, yeah, I can't, because, like, we don't come to work, we're going to lose lots of money. And then, well, they were singing a different tune in, you know, 1920 when the market crashed. But again, that's a side story. So at first, they assumed that this was just a random accident because, you know, I don't know how many random dudes show up with a horse and a cart in the middle of Wall Street and just walk off and leave it. But I mean, maybe this is an occurrence that was happening on the regular. Seems a bit weird to me. But, okay. However, later they determined that it was, in fact, not an accident. And so what happened? Sorry, there was a bug. That's what happened. Sorry. Now, back to my thing. The NYPD, the NYFD, the FBI, and the Secret Service were all looking for the man who had done this. Though I'm not accurate. I mean, I'm not sure that's accurate because I don't know when the FBI was invented, but I don't think it was in the 20s. I'll have to look that up for y'all. Only they had a hard time finding anyone who remembered seeing him that day. I mean, how ordinary must he have been to be riding his horse and cart through Wall Street. I mean, I feel like there were cars by then, like Henry Ford. Didn't he make a car in like the 20s? I mean, I know everybody can't afford that, but if you're on Wall Street, I feel like you're probably able to afford that. And also, you would just be like, hey, look at that weird dude over there with a horse and cart coming down Wall Street. But maybe not, because obviously it was not the case. Anyways, they were able to reconstruct the bomb. However, there were debates over how the bomb went off. I mean, we can't get on the same page in this story. So the only real lead they had were some flyers that were found by a mailman on Wall Street not long before the bombing. These flyers were from a group calling themselves American Anarchist Fighters. And I just want to say that I originally thought that said American Antichrist Fighters. Because, I mean, why not? So the flyers demanded the release of Pitiful. Sorry, I'm really having trouble with words today. Demanded the release of political prisoners. These letters were similar to ones used a year before in two bombing campaigns. However, nothing pointed to anyone specifically. The FBI thought that it could have been a guy named Luigi Galena. Sorry, dude, because I didn't say your name right, but you're also not alive to hear me not say your name right, but I apologize to the family. But he was but he had already left the country. As the years went by, the case grew colder and colder. And, well, they've never identified the bomber. So, I mean, I find this really hard to believe because, like, somebody had to, like, have given some sort of description of the guy. Again, how many people are riding down Broadway? Nope, wrong street. How many people are riding down Wall Street with a horse and cart in 1920? Maybe more than I think, but I don't really see like you riding your horse to Wall Street. Could be wrong. And as I said, this was going to be a very short case this week. And that is all I have for you this week. I hope that you enjoyed it and you will join us next time as we look into another case that will be longer. If you like this podcast, give us a like, 5-star review, and follow us. Also, tell your friends about it because we need more friends. Hey, 5 friends, how you doing? Although I guess now I should technically probably say like 20 friends, how y'all doing? So continue on with your week. And this is where I bid you adieu. I'll be just saying goodbye. Right. Because you need more than 13 minutes of content, I will go ahead and so I wrote a book and it's in the process of getting published. So I'm going to give you a synopsis. Let me know what you think. Would you read it? And later on, I might also like give you a sneak peek, read the prologue or something. All right. So here it goes, ladies and gentlemen. Solomon Carter has always been searching for something. Who wouldn't be if they were left in the woods at age 4, found by loving, caring people who became his adoptive parents? They gave him an amazing childhood. Growing up on a working ranch, there were always things to do. They gave him the gift of adventure with summer hiking trips every year. Once married to the love of his life, he still felt this feeling of searching when he received an email from his dead mother that would change everything in his life. He turned his dreams of flipping houses into a reality when he bought a house halfway across the country from where he and his wife, Bethany, currently lived. He didn't tell her until after he had purchased the home. Of course, he bought it sight unseen as well. What could possibly go wrong? Well, just to name a few. For one, he unknowingly moved them into a cult that was made up of the descendants of the Roanoke colony that had broken away before the rest of the group disappeared. Could this place hold secrets to his past? Could his rash decision to move here in his marriage he was trying so hard to keep intact? And lastly, was the whole town so afraid of that was out in the dark at night? Was Solomon drawn to this place because of something evil or because of his past? So, that is a synopsis of my book. I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know if you did. While recording, I realized that I accidentally said that Cooper wanted $200,000 at 5 a.m. I meant at 5 p.m. And also, the FBI was founded on July 26, 1908. So clearly there was an FBI in 1920. Now, this is all for the episode for real this time. So I bid you adieu. Goodbye.